The Speakeasy Podcast Network.
Men of Letters, a supernatural podcast.
This is Dad's single most valuable possession. Everything he knows about every evil thing is in here. He's passed it on to us. I think he wants us to pick up where he left off. You know, saving people, hunting things, the family business.
Storm's coming. And you boys, your daddy, you are smack in the middle of it.
House rules, Sammy. Driver picks the music. Shotgun shuts his cake hole.
No chick flick moments.
All right, jerk, bitch.
That Constance chick, what a bitch!
What do you think of shooting Casper in the face, you freak?
Eat me. No, wait, you actually might.
Hope your apple pie is freaking worth it!
Hello and welcome back, dear listeners and fans of Supernatural and Men of Letters, a supernatural retrospective podcast. That sure is a mouthful.
That's what she said!
Or we just use our wonderful acronym, MOL. So anywho, welcome to episode 6. Tonight, or well, this morning on this wonderful fall day, Katie and I will be covering Scarecrow, how apropos, and Faith from season 1. So let's get to it, shall we? What's new, jerk? Whose ass did you beat this week?
Not enough asses, bitch.
Aw. So, what's the dealio? What's up? The 411. Anything new? Exciting?
No, just up and down week with lots, just super busy with Halloween stuff at school and volunteering and school and bitchy office people and, you know, when you just want to cut a bitch. And you can't, it's jail.
Yeah, that's a pretty good deterrent, right?
Right, exactly. Jail is like kind of a downer. Death is also kind of a downer.
Yeah.
How's everything going on your front?
Oh, good. We just finished our That Horse Show podcast just released their October episode called That Saw Franchise episode. So if you haven't had a chance to listen to that, please do. We're pretty proud of the episode. It was a ton of fun. It was a ton of fun to record with Chris Barreras and Chris Koenig, and we hope everyone gives it a listen. So that's all I got. And oh, I just recorded a new special sequel this episode, a Halloween episode with Mark, Dave, and Ken, and we talked about the new Halloween movie from that just was released. So anyway, look for that to be dropping pretty soon, and point your ear holes over at the sequel this for the Halloween episode. So yeah,
I can't wait to hear.
Yeah. Also, finally, I'd like to add, Katie, we got a little Twitter love from Grim Horror, who on September 6th enjoyed our last episode and always communicates to us through emojis over at That Horror Show 1 with two skulls, two beers, and a peace sign. So, as always, thank you so much for listening and contributing, Grim. So I guess without further ado, let's take a quick Speakeasy Podcast Network commercial break from the Junk Drawer Podcast and then roll that WBCW commercial trailer for the Scarecrow episode. We'll be back at you in a minute and 10 seconds.
Hey guys, what are you doing?
Ah, sit down, man. Crack a beer. I'm just telling Feeler about how Vlad the Impaler used to shove steaks up donkeys' asses.
Dude, this dude is so fucking gross, but it's so fucking awesome.
It sure is, buddy.
If you want to learn about everything from Vlad the Impaler to anime to rap feuds, join us here at the Junk Drawer Podcast.
That's right. Crack a beer, learn a little, and we'll talk about
our junk!
Yeah, we're going to do that.
You can find us at the drunkdrawerpod.podbean.com and at the speakeasypodcastnetwork.tumblr.com. Also, we're on iTunes, Stitcher, Podcast Addict, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Junk Drawer. Tuesday, all new episodes of Supernatural return. The call they've been waiting for.
Dad, tell me what's going on.
This is bigger than you think.
Brings news that will tear them apart.
I'm taking off.
That's what I want you to do.
Fresh Supernatural returns this week on the WB Tuesday.
Did you want to take this, Katie, or do you want me to take this one?
You got to take it. I don't have access.
Oh, okay. I'll do that.
One. Yeah, you have to read, Tim.
I don't want to read. You can't make it.
I know, you suck at reading.
Yeah, this is horrible. Like school and stuff. Yeah, whatever. All right. So, Scarecrow, directed by Kim Manners, with a story by Patrick Shawn, with a teleplay by John Sheban, with an original air date of January 10th, 2006. Jesus, that can't be right. With the Internet Movie Database current rating with 8.8 out of 10 stars. Now, This synopsis is brought to you from the fine people over at Wikipedia. So, John calls Sam and Dean, telling them that he is hunting the thing that killed their mother, and it is a demon. However, instead of letting them help, he tells them to investigate the disappearance of young couples in rural Burkittsville, Indiana. Sam reveals to Dean that he would rather track down their father, prompting the two to angrily separate. As Sam meets a fellow hitchhiker named Meg Masters, played by Nikki Anacox, Dean starts the investigation and saves a traveling couple from a living scarecrow. Dean calls Sam about a creature and discovers that it's a Vonner that is being summoned in the form of a scarecrow to protect a town in exchange for annual sacrifices, with the sacred tree in the town giving it power. Because a couple intended for the ritual escaped, the townspeople choose Dean and Emily, a girl who lives in town with her aunt and uncle, to be the new sacrifices. However, Sam returns and rescues them, and the scarecrow instead takes Emily's aunt and uncle as its victims. The next morning, Emily and the brothers burn the sacred tree and then leave the town. Meanwhile, Meg hitches a ride on the highway, but slits the driver's throat, collecting the blood into a goblet and using it to communicate with an unknown being whom she calls Father. So, Katie, let's discuss Scarecrow.
I kind of like this one. It's one of my earlier favorites. I think the story is really great. I like it. And I love how you say annual sacrifice, because all I could think of right then was, like, you saying anal sacrifice, because I know how you trip on your words sometimes.
Yes.
I was like, anal sacrifice. That sounds like a terrible porn.
Yes, yes, that's horrible. Maybe Ken Zuckerman will watch that.
No, yeah. It's like my little side trip right there.
Yeah, no, I had to really slow down to make sure I didn't trip on the words. But thank you for catching that and bringing it to everyone's attention.
No, you didn't. It's just like,
that I know, I know. Yeah. But that, in my head, that's what I was thinking. I was like, okay, Tim, slow down.
Sacrifice.
Yes. Yes, no, but I thoroughly enjoyed this episode, and like you, this was one of my early favorites. It's just got this really kind of creepy atmosphere all throughout the episode, and I love the fact that it's a scarecrow, and the scarecrow looks like the guy from Jeepers Creepers almost a little bit, if you've seen those movies. But I really love the dynamic again between the two boys, angrily separating as I read, because there's the tension builds, and finally they, you know, have to go their separate ways. He goes, you know, Sam gets out of the car and says, Dean's like, I'm gonna leave your ass here. He goes, that's what I want you to do. And like, oh okay, it's on. It's like two bulls, like, you know, ready to lock horns, you know.
Yeah, it is. But they also have like that, like, younger brother, like, pouty kind of, you know, I don't want to do that, too bad, I'm doing it.
Yeah.
And, you know, that kind of, like, young dynamic. It changes as you go forward in the series, but I felt like they're just a little bit, like, many to each other.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. It's definitely who's going to be the bigger or smaller bitch.
Absolutely.
But now, I took some notes on this episode, not movie, wow. And the opening scene, I don't know if you noticed it, but there's this... the opening scene where it's with Sam and Dean going into their hotel where they're sleeping, and they pan over, and there's, like, I think it's, like, some random, like, newspaper. But you see, it looks kind of like my beloved Chicago Bears are on, like, the sports section page. It looks exactly like that. So if you pause it just right, you can see it looks like somebody with a Chicago Bears uniform on. So I thought that was pretty cool that they can kind of take a look. It's kind of like an Easter egg almost.
Yeah, well, because they're so – I mean, Indiana.
Yeah, it's close.
What are you going to have on the paper? The Colts?
Yeah, they suck.
I was also going to mention, did you notice, like, while they're driving in the car, mm-hmm. Dean is not driving, it's Sam that's driving.
Yeah, a little reversal, you know. Yeah, Dean is riding shotgun.
Yeah, I'm like, when does that happen? And I guess it may be because they hadn't established that whole, like, that's Dean's car, that's Dean's that's his baby.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it's very rare that Sam drives a car throughout the series. They're approaching like 300 and some odd episodes, and I think Sam has driven it maybe like maybe a dozen or eight times throughout the series. And then also that when John Winchester calls the boys, he's calling from a phone booth. those are like sacred cows. You don't see those very much anymore, like at all. You're lucky if you could find a payphone.
I used to. So when just around the time that this episode was going on, and because Lucy was a little one, and so was Andrew, was probably just born. Like about 3 years after that, in that time, I knew all the payphones on the way home from my job to home, because I had a missing phone for like the longest time. So I would have to stop and check in, or ask, you know, just in case of emergency, I had to know where they all were.
Well, yeah, for sure. Ironically, it's funny you said that, because back in the day, and I should say back in the day, because 2006 doesn't seem like back in the day, but I was working like 7 days a week. I was working at two different like security places, and I remember, I was always by a phone, so I never had a cell phone until like the end of 2006, beginning of 2000, well, I should say maybe November of 2006, because I was always either at my apartment or at one of my two jobs, because I worked like 80 hours a week. And so I would be either at the apartment or I was at my job where I had a phone, and I never needed a cell phone. And there were also payphones like everywhere, even in the I worked for this convalescent center, and there was a bank of payphones. I recently went back there to work temporarily a couple years ago, and there was only one payphone, but I found it. But it cost like a dollar and a half, almost $2 to make a phone call. I'm like, what? Like, that's crazy. But anyway, that's a little.
When I was a kid, it was like a quarter.
Yeah, it was a quarter, yeah.
And then, like, you know, later on, it got to be like 50 cents.
Yeah, yeah. And it was, I think it was a quarter, what, for three minutes, 5 minutes, something like that?
Yeah.
I remember when I was in high school, in junior high school, I should say, I always had about a buck and a half in change just in case I needed to use the payphone. The big thing was back then was like, you better not have a pager, because if you're a pager, you're a drug dealer in high school.
Oh, really? Everybody in my high school had pagers.
Yeah. Well,
they were all, they pretty much all were drug dealers anyway, so.
Well.
It's like for living on the South Side.
Yeah, well. I went to Downs Grove South, so not the same thing. No. But I digress. But okay,
I'm younger than you, so the drugs were a little bit different too.
Yeah, and sure, we'll go with that. Yeah,
like when I was in high school, they were doing nitrous.
Oh, okay. Oh yeah, whippets, right? With like the cans.
Whippets, yes.
We do not condone drug use of any kind at that MOL or at the Speakeasy Podcast Network.
That's legal, and you have a license for it.
Yeah, yeah. Not even for medicinal purposes. Well, maybe for medicinal purposes.
Yeah, glaucoma. Sure.
Yeah, yeah, sure. Yeah. That's it. That's our line. Yeah. Anyway. Yeah. Yeah. Nitrous. But yeah, mostly it was more along the line with just weed, pot. That's
bad. All kinds of people selling all kinds of stuff. It's stupid.
Yes, but okay. Getting back to the show.
Drugs and natural no drugs.
Yeah. So okay. So the boys separate the ride to Burkittsville, and Sam obviously wants to go find their dad, who realizes that the phone number resonates from a California area code. So he wants to go out to California, and Dean's like, no, we need to stay here. Dad gave us a job to do, and he's like, no, we need to find Dean. We need to find Dad. Back and forth, you know, saying, and then Dean said, that's why I always got the extra cookie, because I always did what Dad said, you know. And he's like. So, yeah, we get some good stuff there.
And, well, I mean, and then Sammy's still sore about, you know, Jessica, of course, because that just happened.
Right, yeah. In fact, there's a line where he says, like, how old were you when Mom died? 4? I lost Jessica 6 months ago, so he's still dealing with some stuff.
Like, yeah.
And, so, yeah. So
I mean, that's understandable, but... I was like, a lot of the times I feel like Sam is just a big baby, and I know he's the younger brother and stuff, but especially in like these earlier episodes, they just make him out to be like a little bit more childish.
Yeah. Yeah. He's also, I guess he's the extreme. Like Dean would be like, you know, shoot first, ask questions later, and Sam is, would always be like, well, hold on. Let's think about this real quick.
Well, yeah, and I like that. As their characters develop over the course of the series, it is nice to see how the dynamic changes a little bit, how they mature and stuff like that. Well, I mean, of course, because they are, throughout the series, they're going from being, Sammy in college to being like grown men.
Right. So, yes, and that's very true. The dynamic does shift every once in a while, and they do evolve and change, and that's why I think that this show has the longevity in it, because of that,
You're growing with these characters.
Yeah, you're growing, you're evolving, and at least in Sam's, character, he grows back and forth a lot. I mean, sometimes he comes off as kind of naive, and sometimes he comes off as the brutal killer. Sometimes, it's just, there's a lot of stuff there. There's a lot of layers to Sam. And Dean, to a certain degree, too. I mean, Dean is always pretty much always the rock. His character development, his arc, it's getting, we don't see that transformation much later on in the series. Over the next maybe 5-6 seasons,
Yeah, I mean, with Dean, it's like, he does. You see, like, as the series progresses, you see these, different sides of Dean. And they're just, they deal with, real-life things, aside from, the imaginatory fantasy land of monsters and demons and stuff. They actually go through some, loss and you see that softer side of Dean, and you see that he actually is much softer than you would think, and he's not all hardcore all the time. And, and I think Jared Padalecki and Jensen Ackles both do a great job with their characters and in taking on those different personalities also when they have to, as the storyline changes.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Without giving away.
Yeah. I mean, we are a spoiler-heavy episode. I mean, this series has been on for it just started. It's 14th season right now. So I don't. Have you watched any of the new episodes from this season yet?
I've been a little bit behind on some things. So, okay. It's the beginning of school year. It's kind of a rough time for us. There's a lot going on. But yeah, I can't wait to sit down with the kids and hopefully this afternoon, plug in the computer and hook it up to the TV and just run those last few episodes. Yeah.
No, I didn't catch last week's episode. I mean, I'm not giving anything away because I won't, but the third episode just premiered last Thursday of season 14. I watched the first two episodes, pretty strong outing. I mean, again, I really dig it. I mean, but anyway, yes.
Yeah. I mean, it really seemed like, so when the last season ended, it just, Dean launched into a whole new thing. And I mean, really with not so much like Dean as a character, but, Jensen Ackles, really, it was like amazing to see the transformation that he did. And I'm not going to lie right now. I'm getting all tingly, because he's a good looking guy. And then he's also so very talented.
Mm-hmm. Well, then you're going to really like the way he looks in the first few episodes, because he's all in like 3-piece button-down suits. He's got his hair slicked back.
Did see like a little preview, and he looks like one of the guys from Peaky Blinders.
Yeah, exactly. A little bit, yeah.
I love that. That's a good show, too. Anyways, we should probably get back to
Yes. The current storyline, not going, 13 years or 14 years into the future. So, okay.
Yeah, jumping all over the place. But,
So... Anyway, so one of my favorite lines of this episode was he first pulls into Burkittsville Dean, and he runs into Scotty, who's outside his diner, and he goes, "Scotty, you got a smile that could light up a room, you know that?" Because he just sits there. He sits there with this dumbfounded, just kind of weird look on his face, the character Scotty, and I just thought that was hilarious.
That is a good one. I do like that, because it was pretty funny.
Yeah.
And with Dean trying to carry off both his role and Sammy's role after Sam takes off,
right?
He has a real hard time doing it, and I think that's where he realizes no, he needs his brother, even though he's super stubborn and won't ask for help.
Yeah. Well, but they're each other's yin to their yang. I mean, they, you know, Sam is the one that, you know, is the thinker, obviously. He's the one that does he's primarily the one that does most of the research most of the time. And Dean is always the one that's like, okay, he points the car in the right direction and he gets the weapons ready.
Right. He's the brute and he's the brain.
Yes. But as we see Dean go into Burkittsville and start, you know, talking to the locals like Scotty and the guy, the aunt and uncle over at the gas station / you know, repair shop. I don't know if we ever catch their names really.
Well, I can't remember. Elizabeth is the only one I really remember. But the aunt and uncle are like, oh no, we don't know them. Blah blah blah. And then Elizabeth is like, hey,
Emily, yes. Emily. Which, if you may or may not have caught this, I didn't mean to burp in anybody's ears. It says that Emily is going through everything, and they're going through Emily's backstory a little bit, and Emily mentions that she lost her parents at the age of 13 in a car accident, and I'm like, huh? With the ritual sacrifices in this town, I'm wondering, was it really an accident?
Yeah.
I mean. You know, because there's that line later on in the episode where the aunt says it's the good of the many outweigh the good of the few, and she, you know, that's when they decide to sacrifice, you know, Emily and Dean, or try to sacrifice Emily and Dean. So I just thought that was kind of interesting because I never picked up on it before, and I'm like, huh. At least I don't remember picking up on it, and it was just really...
No, I hadn't either. I'm surprised. You know, when you said that, I kind of was... I hadn't thought of that myself, so way to go, Tim, for that.
Yes, but... And, I think... just getting back to the aunt and uncle. I believe the aunt and uncle were... Oh, Stacy and Hal Jorgensen. They're the ones that ran the repair shop. I'm just looking at Internet Movie Database real quick. Yeah, it looks like that they're the ones... That play the characters. All right. I mean, sorry. Oh my God. Let's reboot that. Emily Jorgensen and Harley Jorgensen were played by Tanya Soliner and Tom Butler. So those are the aunt and uncle. And,
okay.
Yeah. So I just kind of thought that was kind of weird. So that's I thought that was pretty cool. And then there was a scene where I think it was the Dean or Sam was going through his. So we see Sam walking down the road, right? I want to say next scene. He's walking down the road, and that's when he bumps into Meg Masters, a cute little hitchhiker,
I said she's kind of skeevy.
Yeah. You get this kind of weird vibe from her, and the dialogue they first have is kind of a little funny. And he's like, they're talking to each other, and he startles her, and then he's like, "No offense, but I'm not telling you where I'm going," you know?
Yeah. Right.
And. The van pulls up, and he pulls up to pick one of them up. He goes, "Just a girl," and the girl gets in. He goes, "Really? You're gonna pick a creepy van guy over me?" She goes, "Totally," and to take off down the road.
Yeah.
But yeah, I thought that was pretty funny. But then there's a scene where Sam is going through his contacts, and I don't remember where exactly it was, but you're seeing him go through the contacts on his was it BlackBerry?
I don't know.
It was an older phone. I mean,
maybe a Nokia or something that.
And you see,
but yeah, he was in the bus station. That was closer towards
the middle of the episode,
like middle to the end.
Oh, okay, all right. So I'll try to get back to that. So we cut back to Dean, and he's talking to Emily's aunt and uncle, Haley and Stacy, and you mentioned Katie. They said that they never saw the couple from last year come through here, and then Emily comes down the stairs and says, "Oh no, remember because he had that really cool tattoo." And then Harley, that's the uncle. He's the one that says, "Oh yeah, he couldn't be here much more than 10 minutes." You know, like changing the story just a tad bit.
Yeah.
And asks for directions. So yeah, so he's getting nowhere, and so he then goes out with Dean. Then goes out to the orchard. Correct. He travels out to the orchard.
Yeah, and then he goes and he looks at the scarecrow, and he's like, you know. He does that, he's creepy as fuck or whatever. But then he gets up on a ladder or something, and he notices that the scarecrow has that same tribal tattoo that the guy in the picture had.
Okay.
And then so then I think he goes back to town, and, you know, he starts to inquire a little bit more.
Right, okay. Oh, he goes, "Dude, you're fugly." And then he
Right.
And then he crawls up the ladder, and he sees that. Oh, he's like, "Oh, nice tattoo," because he mentions it matches it to, what's it, the missing victim's tattoo?
Yeah, exactly, on the paper. A little side note: I wanted to tell you, we were out with the kids yesterday, and Ellie, who's 8, said, "Mom, that's so ugly and gross." She's like, "That's where Dean would call it fugly."
Oh, really? That's awesome.
Yeah, she, you know, she's 8, so she doesn't know what that means.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm like, we had watched the episode together, so I thought that was hysterical that she was like, "Yeah, Dean would say fugly."
Yeah, that's too funny. I mean, well, kids nowadays. Right.
Like, you know, she's so innocent and stuff. But she's all my kids love that show. It's ridiculous how much I love it.
Well, raising them right. I can't. I think Nate's got probably about another 6 to 8 months before I try to introduce him to him, because he'll come downstairs. He'll look at like the pictures from when I went to the Chicago Supernatural Convention, and he's like, "Daddy, when can I watch that?" I'm like, "Well, I mean, he's seen a couple of PG-13 movies, so I mean, I'm like, I'm not like, you know, a total prude. I'm like, but there's just some stuff, like, especially when, like, in this episode where Meg slits his throat, the driver's throat, I'm like,
yeah,
no. Even for me, that kind of draws a line. I mean, now he's seen Jaws, and my son's seen Jaws, and he's seen Killer Clowns from Outer Space. He's seen a few other, like, you know, age-appropriate monster movies, but yeah, I can't justify throat slitting at his age.
No, it is a little bit much.
But anyway, so Dean goes out to the orchard. He discovers that's the missing victim is now the Scarecrow, and he goes back to town, I believe, correct?
Yeah.
And that's when he runs into the other couple that ran into car trouble, correct? That they're sitting in Scotty's restaurant.
Yes, and he's trying to make like small talk with them, but then he just, you know, they're like, "Stop pestering this nice young couple."
Right. And I love the way Dean, he's sitting there next to him. He's like, he goes, "Scotty, can I get a cup of coffee and a slice of that world famous apple pie?" He's just like giving it to him both barrels.
Yeah. Well, and too, that it's like, you know, he says that thing where he's trying to talk to these couple and he's trying to like warn them of the danger. And he's like, "You know, my brother was here. He just gave you these big
puppy dog
eyes and, you know, you'd be all over it." But, you know, he's not. And so I think that's when Dean realizes he's at a loss.
Yes. This may be where he's like realizing they work better as a team, as a duo. Like the dynamic duo. So.
But then I think that's when they chase him out of town.
Yeah. Scotty calls the cop or the sheriff. And the sheriff dismisses him because Dean's like, what was it? It wasn't a brake light, right? It was some sort of like a brake line, because they pulled in for gas, and then Harley noticed there was that the car was needed to be repaired. That's why they were having lunch at Scotty's restaurant.
Yeah, coincidentally,
yeah.
It really saved us because we had a, you know, broken brake line. And
yeah, and Dean's like, "For a broken brake line, it's going to take all day. I know a thing or two about cars. I could probably have you up and running in about an hour or two." And they're like, "No, we'd rather have a professional look at it, blah, blah, blah." And that's when Scotty calls the sheriff. The sheriff pretty much tells him, "Get the hell out of my town before I arrest you." The next scene is the police officer chasing Impala out of Burkittsville. And I believe that's when we cut to Sam in... at the bus stop, correct? Or the bus station. Yeah.
With him and Meg and...
Yeah. And I love when Sam walks up to the teller to try to get a bus ticket. He goes, "Yeah, it won't be a bus to California until tomorrow." He's like, "Well, is there a quicker way?" She goes, "Yeah, you could buy a car or rent a car."
Darky bus depot lady.
Yeah. And then that's when he turns around and he runs right into Meg. And she goes, "What are you doing here?" And... blah, blah, blah. And then I think she says something about... Sam asks her about the guy that she hitchhiked with. And she's like, "Oh, something about it didn't work out." Or something like that. Very, like, foreshadowing, you know, what happens later on in the episode. And then they decided to, have... I guess there's, like, a diner or a lunch area or a place to eat at this bus stop.
Mm-hmm.
Or bus station. And so they're drinking beer, which is... pretty cool for a bus depot to have a liquor license, I guess. But they're drinking beer and they're talking about their family, and we get an insight into Meg's character about, you know, they're just swapping war stories about their families and what's wrong with their families. And Meg mentions that she's traveling out to California to get away from her folks because she goes, they want me to live their life, not my life. They're like, they want me to go to college. They want me to be smart, but not too smart not to snag a man. You know, all this, like, you know, backstory.
Like, it's a little too convenient.
Exactly. Exactly. And Sam's like,
Sam's
like, huh, maybe I found a kindred spirit, you know, blah, you know, all this kind of stuff. So, yeah. So there's that. and then I want to say we cut back to Dean. Doesn't he go to, like, the local community college, or when does that happen? And he talks to, like, the cigarette-smoking man for X-File fans, William B. Davis, his character.
I love that guy.
Yeah.
And so he's asking about different things, and then whatever he thought it was, it turns out to be, like, it's like a pagan god or something.
They call it, a pagan fertility god. That's what he thinks it is. But it turns out to be... a pagan fertility god, you know, that lives in orchards and Call of Honor, find out.
Well, the other thing is, too, is there's somewhere in there, I forget where, it's like Dean and Sam are on the phone together.
Right.
And then, so I think this is where, you know, he talks to this professor.
Right. Is it on the way to see the professor, I believe? Or it was after, it was before he saw the professor.
Before he saw the professor, because after he sees him, there's the sheriff again.
Correct.
And they take him.
Right, that's correct. So yeah, he's on the way to see because he tells Sam, I'm on my way to see the professor at the local community college, and that's when Sam says, oh really? I was like, and then Dean says something about and it'd be much easier without to have my trusty geek boy by my side, but what are you gonna do? Something along those lines. But I'm sorry, continue on, Katie, please.
No. And I was just going to say that they, you know, the sheriff and the professor in cahoots. And so then, you know, they, I don't know if they cracked Dean over the head or what it is, but they drag him off.
Right.
And then you see him tied up in the basement.
After he's talking to William B. Davis's character, which is the professor. I don't know if they actually give him a name. They just call him the college professor, and there may be database. But I kind of geeked out because I was a big X-Files. I'm still a big X-Files fan, but when I saw him, like, oh man, that's a cigarette smoking man. What is he doing in this show?
Right.
But yeah, he's talking to the college professor who kind of is dismissive of Dean's thing. He goes, you do realize these are just lore. This is nothing, you know.
Yeah.
This is just, you know, speculation. And then we find out that, you know, as soon as Dean opens the door to leave the professor's office, and he gets cracked in the head by the sheriff. And, you know, then he wakes up in the cellar of the aunt and uncle. So, yeah, So, continuing on.
And then they open up the doors and they shove Emily down there with him.
Yes.
And then they're, you know, talking about it, and he kind of fills her in, and, you know, she's like, what are you doing? And she's all like, she's confused because she had no idea. The one person in town who didn't know anything about what was going on.
Right.
Totally innocent.
She didn't notice anything out of the ordinary. We come to find out through this episode that other towns around them have been going through, like, I wouldn't say decay and famine, but they've been hit hard by
drought and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, exactly. All the rural towns around them have been hit by drought and by, like, you know, and they're just scraping by, but yet somehow Burkittsville is thriving and you know producing. But I love the scene where they throw Emily down into the cellar with Dean, and Dean's hooked, they're all both chained up, and Dean's like, she goes, what's the plan of the guy? He goes, I'm working on it. And then we speed up a little time, and it's been a few hours, and it's like, what are we going to do? It's like, I'm still working on it.
In the orchard, and they're all tied up.
Yeah. He's like, I'm working on it. And he said it, but with like a question mark at the end of it. And here's the thing. Then we cut back to Sam in the bus depot, and he's looking at his phone. And this is what I wanted to talk about earlier. And but he's scrolling through his recent contacts, and one is Jerry's pager from the Phantom Traveler. Remember Jerry, the guy who found the wreckage for the boys?
Yes.
And then there was, I want to say, Rebecca Warren. She was the brother of Zach Warren in the Skin episode. So we get these like little... So if you really paid attention, or if you wanted to do the research, which I've done for you now, there's these little snippets, these Easter eggs to other episodes. And then we get, obviously, Dean. And then there's this one that didn't pop up. I'm like, Mary Lynn something or other. Mary Lynn Lou or something? Yeah, Mary Lynn Lou. But that name is actually... She's the graphic designer on Supernatural. I thought that was pretty funny. She works behind the scenes, and they put her name on the in Sam's phone. I thought that was really, really cool. But that's just because I'm a geek boy, so I like anything like that.
It is. It's fun. It's fun little extras that you get.
Yeah. But okay. So Sam is kind of freaking out a little bit because he can't get a hold of Dean, and Meg's like, "Well, maybe his phone died. Maybe he just turned it off, or he's just ignoring you." He's like, No, he wouldn't do that. You know, we cut back to Emily and Dean sitting in the orchard waiting to be sacrificed. And what happens next, Katie?
I think Sammy pulls up and he saves them, you know.
Right. So Dean is telling Emily, "Hey, is that Scarecrow moved? You know, is he moving? Because
he
gets down off his cross or his perch or whatever it is." And then all of a sudden you hear this rustling, and then they both of them get freaked out from him because they think it's, you know, the Scarecrow or the Vonner. And it turns out to be Sam. And Dean's like, "Oh my God, I take back everything I've ever said about you."
Right. Oh, you know what was funny? Okay, so when they first tied him and Emily up,
right?
This is one of my favorite lines in the thing. And so they tie him and Emily up, and as the aunt and uncle are walking away, they're like, he says, "I hope the apple pie was freaking worth it."
Yes, and well, and obviously that's at the beginning of our, and that's in our theme song, that actual quote. I hope your freaking apple pie was worth it.
Oh yeah, and we forgot to mention how when Dean and Emily are in the basement. They got everybody under the black umbrellas, kind of hovering in the rain, about what they're going to do. And that's like kind of one of my favorite shots. Is as they pull back, you see these, you know, all these black umbrellas with the rain kind of coming down.
Yes, it's just a very good scene.
It's a good feel to it. So, sorry for like skipping back and forth.
Oh, no, it's perfect. Hey, we do it all the time. And if you're a fan of the show, well, you're used to that.
Right.
But yeah, no, I love that scene as well, and I love that we get a close up of the sheriff and Scotty, and I believe it's just the other and the aunt and uncle. I think, and there might be another person there just to round out like the town elders or whatever. There's a great where Harley's talking. He's like, he goes, "You know, it weighs on me too. You know, I mean, I gotta, you know, give these guys directions out of town. We all close our doors and pretend not to hear the screaming. You know, going through this whole like, you know, kind of thing," which is trying to give some, I guess, empathy towards these characters. But I'm really not feeling it. You know.
No, because it's like you're, you know, benefiting on the, you know, you're benefiting from the death of others.
Right. Your town is, exactly. You're doing annual sacrifices to appease this Vonner God, to keep your crops healthy and keep you guys all in the black, so to speak, with, you know, money and everything.
And anal sacrifices are the worst, right, Tim?
Yeah. I wouldn't know about that. Would you, Katie?
No.
Now, I know, personally, I don't do that, like, at all. I mean, that is a big no-no.
No, that's like an exit only.
Yes. One-way street.
Yeah, no, I'm not. No.
Yeah, don't go for the anal sacrifices. Okay.
Yeah, I don't like that.
But moving on from the anal sacrifices. The annual anal sacrifice. Ooh, there you go. Annual anal sacrifices.
Stop talking about it. Now I'm just thinking about poop.
Okay, anyway. So, so Sam comes, rescues Dean and Emily, and Dean asks Sam, like, "Hey, has the Scarecrow moved off its perch or its cross?" And he's like, "What Scarecrow?" And that's when we see the Scarecrow running through the orchard after Sam and Dean and Emily, and then we see the townspeople like surround them.
Yeah, and, with their flashlights and
their shotguns, you know.
You know, this is what you do for family. And
right, right. This is what sacrifice means, sweetheart. And I'm like, what the fuck? You're a stone cold bitch. You know, give me a break. This is what you do for family. And then what happens to the aunt and uncle? They get theirs, right, Katie?
Yeah, they do get theirs.
All right, why don't you?
That's the best part because you know. Yeah, who gets it first? I think the uncle gets it first.
He gets like the sickle. Was it the sickle or is it the? I think it's that curved, sharp like.
Yeah, that's a scythe or a sickle.
Yeah.
So they both, you know, he gets it, and then she starts to wail.
Yeah, and then she
gets it.
Yeah, and they just drag him through the forest. So now basically the annual anal sacrifice has been completed for that year.
And then Dean and Sam and Emily are looking, you know, do you know anything about this tree? And she's like, well, there is this really old tree that it was like the first one brought over.
By the pilgrims or by the, you know.
Yeah. And so they go and they see the weird markings on the tree. And then, you know, their trusty lighter and lighter fluid, they just light the bitch on fire.
Right, right. Yeah, and because that's another thing is that that's where the Vonner gets its power is through the oldest tree, the oldest tree in the orchard. And yeah, that's what happens. And then they slay like that some of a bitch on fire. And I think Emily says, like, you do realize this town's going to die. She goes, let it burn or something like that along those lines. Exactly. And I'm like, that's awesome. You know, and then you see they put Emily on a bus to get out of town. And how Sam got there is to the orchard is he stole a car. I thought that was hilarious. He hotwired a car and stole a car. And then he goes, that's my boy, Sammy.
Yeah, exactly. But I love that part.
As we ping pong back and forth between, you know, the scenes. But they put Emily on a bus and she goes out of town, I guess, to another aunt and uncle or another family member somewhere. And that's the end of the episode, boys and girls.
Oh, no, you forgot. You forgot about Meg. So Meg is, you know, she gets a ride with another guy in a skeevy bus. And, you know, he's like, so where are you going? And she's like, how about we pull over here?
Yeah, I got to make a phone call.
Yeah, I got to make a phone call. And so she's like, no, not that kind. And that's where she, like, slits his throat and sticks the bowl under, catches the blood, and does this whole, like, phone call type thing.
Yeah.
You know, and you don't hear what the other side is saying. It's just her kind of talking to this bubbling bowl of blood.
Yeah, extremely long distance.
Yeah, super. You know, I didn't know, like, you can call hell by, like that. But
yeah.
What up?
Yeah, and she's like, why did you want me to let them escape? You know, I could have taken them both, you know, all this kind of, like, you know, stuff. And so Meg is not letting on to Sam. You know, there's more to her. There's more to Meg, let's just put it that way.
Yeah.
So, I give this episode a thumbs up. I love it a lot. It's definitely it's in the running for one of my top, I would say top 10 episodes, like, or, you know, of the entire series so far, because that's just how much I love it. I just thought the dynamic between Sam and Dean, the chemistry between them, especially when they're fighting, is very good. The introduction of Meg, and the Scarecrow is badass. We don't get to see the Scarecrow or the Vonner too much, but
no, it's really good though.
Still, it's still a very creepy episode all over the place or all throughout. So, yeah. I definitely give it a thumbs up. I thoroughly enjoyed the episode. What about you?
I did. It's totally a thumbs up for me. I mean, again, with the dynamic between the two brothers and. The storyline was good, and there's lots of good, like, cinematography. It's just, they did a really excellent job on this one. And then, you know, with characters that, you start to hate a character, and that's when you have to realize that how good the actor or actress is doing with that character is that, because I just find Meg disgusting.
Yeah.
She is, like, super skeevy and just really, I don't know.
Yeah.
Just sad and gross, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You definitely, when you first meet Meg, when you first meet Meg at the side of the road, you know, she's cute, but there's this weird vibe that they get off of her, and that's a real, a real credit to the actress who plays her. I mean, because what was the name? Nikki Anacox. Anacox. Because and obviously she's got a nice little arc in this in this series as well, and she comes back for a few guest spots later on in the series. But yeah, no, I totally get what you're saying. Yeah, she's definitely kind of definitely got that skeevy vibe going, and especially the way she smiles, and it's almost like a smile with a wink and a nod, like where you better watch yourself because if you turn her back, she's going to stab you in it, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, that's. I mean, do you have anything else you'd like to add to the discussion of Scarecrow?
No, I think that's. I think we summed it up pretty well.
Yeah. No. Well, perfect. That moves into our classic songs used in this episode. There was 4 classic songs used in this episode, thanks to the fine people over at TuneFind.com. One was an alternate music used for the episode, and we'll get into that in just a moment. One was a Lodi by Creedence Clearwater Revival, and that's when Sam first arrives at the bus depot. Then there was Puppet by Cole Plitz. This is the song Meg is listening to when Sam first runs into Meg on the road. She's listening to that on her Walkman, or I shouldn't say Walkman, right? Can I say Walkman? Am I dating myself?
Yeah, Walkman, whatever.
CD player, MP3 player.
Man, whatever.
Phone. Anyway. Moving on. Anyway, so that's the song she's listening to by Puppet. Finally, number 3 is Bad Company by Bad Company, and that's the end of the episode where Meg is in the van about to make a long-distance phone call. Now, the alternate music used there for the episode was used for Netflix because apparently they couldn't get the rights to that song, and that was done by Five Finger Death Punch. So there you go. Those are the 3 or 4 classic songs used in the episode. I've got 4 fun facts real quick, so we'll get into those before we move on. Number 1, after getting the call from their father, Sam and Dean are having a discussion about where they're going to next. Sam says, "We're going to California." "Going to California" is a Led Zeppelin song. This foreshadows Dean later using the name John Bonham, the late drummer of Led Zeppelin, when he meets Scotty in town.
Yes.
So, that's an interesting tidbit. Number 2, the college professor that Dean meets is William B. Davis, better known as the Smoking Man from the X-Files TV show. Supernatural is said to take some inspiration from this show and has several nods to it throughout the season. Number 3, the plot is heavily reminiscent of Neil Gaiman's novel American Gods. Show creator Eric Kripke has cited Neil and American Gods as his influence on the or for the show. Number 4, this episode takes place in Indiana in April, but when Dean walks through the orchard and finds the Scarecrow, the ground is littered with fresh-looking apples. There are also apples in the apple crate. That show no signs of having spent the winter outdoors. So that's kind of an interesting fun fact.
Yeah, that's like a fall kind of a thing. Even like the smog and stuff.
Yeah.
It's very typical, like in the Midwest, of being fall.
Right.
You know, some of the apples are up, some of the apples are down. And
right. Exactly. But, well, that you know, that's what, Canadian weather?
Yeah.
But, so, well, I...
Canada,
yeah.
Whatever.
Oh, Canada. No. Well, we can finally now pile back in an Impala and leave the apple orchard of Burkittsville, Indiana behind. And try to have a little faith, Sam and Dean will soon reconnect with their father. But first, let's pause for our final Speakeasy Podcast Network commercial break from Throwing the Controller and the WBCW commercial trailer for Faith. We'll be back at you in 1 minute and 4 seconds.
Man, Chris, you suck at this.
Man, it's lag, shut it.
Maybe we should play Final Fantasy Mystic Quest.
I got next.
Son of a fucking
son of
bitch,
a
goddamn it.
You love it.
Now that that's out of the way, we here at Throwing the Controller get together to talk about video games of all types, retro, current, whatever we choose. So join myself, Chris Barreras, Eric Barajas, and our digital Jedi, Brian Warren, as we dive into the world of video games.
Let's give the people what they want.
And join our Facebook group, the Speakeasy Video Game Group.
I'm Gina Linetti, and I approve this message. I love you!
Tuesday, the Reaper is coming.
I'm gonna die.
Fresh new Supernatural on the WB Tuesday.
Well, we're back. Katie, you want to take it away?
Yeah, sure. So we have Faith, directed by Alan... Ellen Croker, written by Sarah Gamble and Rael Tucker. Original air date was January 17th, 2006. The IMDb current rating is 8.9 out of 10 stars. I don't get that point rating, but whatever. When bad... So the synopsis is, while battling a raw head, Dean gets electrocuted and his heart is damaged. Doctors only give him a few weeks to live. Sam searches for a way to save him and believes he may have found an answer in a preacher who claims to heal the incurable, is played by Kevin McNulty. At the congregation, Dean is chosen and cured of his condition. However, he and Sam soon learn that an openly gay teacher died of a heart attack at the same moment Dean was healed. Further research reveals that the deaths occurred in unison with other healings, prompting the brothers to believe that the preacher is using black magic to control a reaper, healing people in exchange for lives of those he deems immoral. However, that they eventually discover that his wife, Rebecca Jenkins, is behind everything and rush to destroy the altar used to control the reaper. The preacher begins to heal Layla, played by Julie Benz, a young woman with a brain tumor, and the reaper then goes after Dean. Sam destroys the altar, and the freed reaper takes the wife's life, although the young woman is not healed. She later tells Dean that she has made peace with her coming death, and Dean promises to pray for her. Bum, bum, bum! All right, what do you think, Timmy?
Yeah, this was a solid episode for me. It wasn't my favorite, but it was definitely a strong episode. You know, honestly, my biggest two things with the, or actually my biggest thing with this episode is that the opening sequence.
Yeah.
Because now, as I mentioned earlier in the episode, I've worked in security, so I've been trained with like. You know, batons and handcuffs and, you know, tasers. And I realized that Sam, there was a throwaway line where Dean says, we juiced these bad boys up to, you know, forget, what was it, 500,000 volts or something? Mm-hmm. I forget. Oh, 50,000 volts. And a hundred thousand volts. Now, a normal voltage for a stun gun or for, you know, a taser is about 50,000 volts, give or take, depending on how many feet are. Now, I know this is going to get a little scientific, but anyway, so depending on the wattage and depending on the arc of the thing, or when you shoot the taser, you know, there's different feet of cord. So it's either 15 or 30 feet or whatever it is, 10. Anyway, so Dean mentions to Sam that we juice these bad boys up to 100,000 volts. Normally they're roughly about 50,000, but that's open air, so that doesn't tell you. So when you pull the trigger on a thing, it shoots these two pins or these needles that come out, and when it hits the target, it delivers the jolt. But 50,000, but that's an open arc. So if you're shooting and it goes 10, 15 feet, 30 feet, whatever it is, you're losing a little bit of power behind that. You're losing a little bit of electricity behind that. So I don't see how that would damage his heart, you know what I'm saying, even if he's standing in water. Because, I mean, I've looked at a lot of different videos, and when I was talking to different, like, guys who are trainers and stuff like that, like, if you're standing in water and you shoot somebody else that isn't or that is, and it hits the target, you're really not going to get electrocuted because there's some sort of scientific method where it won't come back to you. It's not like if you dropped a toaster if you're sitting in a bathtub, you dropped a toaster or a radio in your bathtub. It doesn't have the same effect. So,
well, this is where I have to remind you that it's TV.
I know, and I have to suspend disbelief a lot. But I'm like, that just kind of rubs me a little bit the wrong way. But the rest of the episode is solid. I mean, I get. For dramatic purposes and for obviously a suspension of disbelief, that's what needs to happen. But I'm like, okay, all right. So anyway,
I found that like the whole like lightning bolt to Dean and like it was cheesy. But I mean, for that time, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I get it. I mean, from a writer's standpoint, I mean, there's only so much you can do, and again, you have to suspend a little bit of disbelief. But I was like, you know, somebody's worked with those things on a regular basis. I know that it's not going to get triggered a heart attack.
No, that's understandable. I also wish they had set up the beginning of the episode a little bit differently, because I just didn't care for how, like, it started.
Yeah, and they never go into what exactly is a rawhead. Which, I mean, there's a movie called Rawhead Rex. It was a short story by Clive Barker, but we never. This is the first time we've ever heard it in the Supernatural universe. And honestly, Rawhead, at least Rawhead Rex, was like a demigod, at least in the short story by Clive Barker. But this, I don't know what exactly these creatures are. You know, I know what a werewolf is. I know what a vampire is. I know what is, you know, a demon. I just didn't know what the hell Rawhead was.
I don't even remember, honestly, hearing them say what it was.
No, and honestly, this is the first and only time we hear about it until, obviously, I think, either season 13 or this next season, season 14, is where they talk about a raw head. No, I'm sorry. It's season 14. So it's this season, this episode, and then you skip like about 12 or 13 seasons, and then you hear about an attack of a raw head. But I don't know what the fuck a raw head is, honestly.
No.
Anyway.
Hopefully we get to it eventually, and they'll explain whatever it is.
But moving forward. So what did you think, Katie?
I liked it. I did like this episode. It was, overall, I think it was a pretty good story. I liked how innocent the preacher was to everything else. You know, mm-hmm. He seemed like a really good person. Layla, her character I recognize from, some other shows. And I really hate the wife, which, I mean, I know they did a good job on the wife. I hate her. She's the worst.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
The story is pretty good. I mean, as far as, like, it's very, like, mopey.
Mm-hmm.
The weather is mopey. The shooting is dark. And I think they did that just to, you know, reinforce how, you know, grim things look for Dean.
Right. And even Dean looks like, he looks very pale throughout the entire episode. I shouldn't say throughout the entire episode. At least in the first, like, maybe 15, 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And obviously, yeah, because he's dying.
They did a good job making him look like crap.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And there's a scene, where, or there's a line where he checks himself out of the hospital, and he appears at the hotel room of Sammy, and he's like, what are you doing out of the hospital? But he's like, I'm not even going to die in a hospital where the nurses aren't even hot.
Yeah, right.
But there is a line. There's this, even why I say it's a solid episode, it's not like my favorite episode, but there's a couple of really great lines. One was from Mrs. Rourke to Sam. I think it was to Sam or Dean. It's like, to Sam. I gave your brother life. I can take it away. I'm like, what a stone cold bitch. I mean, what?
Yeah, that's totally. Like, there's a lot of bitchiness in the last couple of episodes.
Yeah.
Like, who do you think you are, bitches?
Yeah, I'm like, yeah. But like you said, I mean, I felt very empathetic towards the preacher, because he thought he was doing God's work. He thought he was actually, you know, healing and doing good in the world. And it turns out his wife was into black magic and, you know, trapping a reaper, which, FYI, cautionary tale, don't ever trap a reaper. It's not going to end well for you.
I'm pretty sure they don't like it.
Yeah, I don't think so either. So, yeah.
Well, okay, so they're in the beginning, and they're in the hospital, and the police, you know, Sammy's talking to the police and gives them the fake insurance or whatever. And then, so, one of the things that I do like is when they're in the hospital, and Dean's talking about the doctor, he's like the fabric softener teddy bear guy.
Yes, 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 yes. He's like, daytime television, somebody kill me now, or something like that, too.
Yeah. Which is also funny, because he used to be on a soap opera.
Oh, yes, yes. Was it One Life to Live? I don't remember. I know he was on the soap opera. Not One Day at a Time. That's something else. That's a TV show from the 70s and 80s. But, you know, honestly, when Sam... I'm so funny. It's glad you brought that
up. The General Hospital was on. That would have been funnier. I'm not sure, though.
Yeah, well, hey, you know what? If you guys want to do some quick internet movie database research, yeah, go ahead. Take it out. Take a look.
Yeah, and then let us know. Hit us up on Twitter or whatever, on Facebook.
Yeah, Facebook.
But, yeah, because we're too lazy to do that now. It's Sunday. We're taking a break.
Yes. But, oh, no, but the actress that Sam is talking to, the nurse that he's talking to, is played by Erica Carroll. And she actually comes back later in the series. And she comes back as, at first, as a young mother. And then she also comes back as Hannah, one of the angels of Castiel.
Oh, right.
Because I was like, she sounds very, she looks very familiar. I'm like, oh my God, that's Hannah, Hannah. And like, yeah, but she's been in 9 different episodes. She plays the nurse here, but then she comes back as Hannah, and she also comes back as a young mother in one of the episodes. So her first stint was as a nurse, and she goes back as a young mother, and then she comes back, and then she has an arc as Hannah. So I thought that was interesting, because I was like, that's really, really kind of cool, but like, where have I seen her before? I'm like, what other show or movie have I seen her before? And then I did some research, and I'm like, oh, fuck, that's Hannah. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, so I thought that was really kind of cool. And I love the way that they bring back certain actresses and actors and that maybe had, like, a bit role, but then bring her back later in the series as someone completely different. So, I mean, and once you've been on the air for, like, 13, 14 years, you're bound to run out of, like, actors and actresses to
people you want
to
deal with, you know.
Yeah, at least in Cantonadia, right?
Cantonadia.
But anyway, Sam is talking to the nurse, and we find out that eventually, Dean checks himself out of the hospital, and then they go down to to see this faith healer, and Dean has completely doesn't have any like faith in this guy whatsoever, which, haha, faith, with the episode, and there's another good line even by the preacher where Sam and Dean are sitting in the audience, and Dean turns to Sam and says something like, "I don't believe this guy. This guy's full of shit," or whatever. It's a crock, let's get out of here. And then he's like, and then the faith healer who's blind says, "Why don't you come up here and I'll show you it's not fake, let me heal you." And he goes, you got to remember one thing. He goes, if God takes one sense away, he heightens everything else. So I have really good hearing. Blind people have very good hearing, something along those lines. I thought that was pretty awesome.
Yes, exactly.
So,
and before they get into the tent, they meet Layla.
Yes.
And then, right then, Dean perks up and everything.
Right. And then
he says, "Shh. She can work in mysterious ways."
Right. Well, yeah, they run into Layla, and they also run into the one guy who's handing out pamphlets saying this guy's full of shit,
Yeah.
Don't believe him. He's a liar. So, yeah. They go to...
He's setting up some of the story, too, which,
Mm-hmm. Oh, for sure. Yeah, so I guess what Dean's plucked out of the audience right now, it's next thing chronologically, correct, I believe?
Yeah, he's like, "I'm not exactly a believer."
Yes.
And then, the preacher says, "You will be."
Exactly, which is great. So the preacher lays his hands on Dean, and Dean, I guess, passes out, I want to say.
He, falls to the knee and his knees and kind of collapses.
Right.
And as he's going down, you see this, blurry image.
Right.
Before he kind of passes out.
Right.
And what do they do next? So they go to the doctor's office, right?
Right. And she says that at this time, it was 2006. So this was – Dean was, 25, 26 years old? 25? Mm-hmm. And so they go see a cardiologist because the other doctor, the ER doctor who was treating Dean originally said that he had, a week to live, maybe a month at tops. The scar tissue in his heart was bad, whatever. So they go to the doctor. And she's like, "Oh yeah, it's your heart is completely healthy. There's no scar tissue. There's nothing, But then again, I don't foresee that being an issue at all because you're 25 or 26 years. You look to be in perfect health, whatever." Yeah. But then doesn't she have mentioned that somebody else that was also the same age as Dean that was a teacher dropped dead?
Yeah. Another guy. But you never know because so and so, this other guy had a heart attack.
Yeah, just yesterday.
Yes.
Which kind of raised a red flag to Dean at around the same time that Dean was being healed. And
right.
this guy was what, swimming, not swimming in a pool, right? Was he swimming in a pool?
He was swimming in the pool, yeah. But then it turns out that he had gotten out of the pool and was like, "Something's chasing me."
Right, right. Yeah.
But I mean, Dean doesn't feel right about the whole thing. And I think he talks to Sammy about seeing, like, some kind of spirit.
Right. And he even mentioned, there's a line, again, another good line. He goes, he's like, I hate being singled out at birthday parties. Why this? Why me? You know, kind of, like, right. things. Like, so you automatically think that Dean doesn't place as much value on his life as he should. Everyone else around him says, no, you need to continue on. And Dean's like, I'm no better than anybody else. So,
this is the going theme, I think, with Dean throughout, is that he doesn't realize his importance as a person.
Right.
Throughout the series. And I think at some point he starts to kind of get it. But for the most part, he's just, I'm not important. This is the job I'm going to do until I'm dead.
Yeah.
Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, and all that hunter crap that we hear over the seasons, hunters die bloody, we don't get happy endings, all that kind of stuff,
Yeah.
so Dean has a very low opinion of himself, I want to say, when it comes to this kind of thing, he doesn't realize his importance.
Yeah, and for as much as of a hard ass that he is, he's very insecure too.
Oh, for sure. I mean, obviously that hard assness that's a total cover to protect his real emotionness of feeling kind of I guess I wouldn't say worthlessness, but feeling less than others,
Yeah.
But yeah, so no, some very good stuff there. I mean, I really enjoyed that peeling back that layer of Dean, peeling back the onion layer of Dean. So
yeah.
So Dean gets healed. He realizes that someone else died in his place, and he's not. And obviously, like most people, that wouldn't be comfortable with that.
Well, and I mean, because of that, go to the preacher's house and they talk about how the preacher got his gift,
right?
And then they're like, well, why? He's like, well, why me? Why me? And the preacher's kind of telling him he does have unfinished business and. He has a more important purpose.
Right, right.
So while he's doing that, Sammy's at the pool and trying to find out about the guy that passed away. And so that's when you see one of the other attendants saying how that he's being chased. And, Sam notices that the clock has stopped. And and the other guy's like, yeah.
That's the oddest thing, right? Something like that.
Yeah, it's odd and it's funny. And he's like, well, that's right about the time that the teacher died. So, I mean, and then they cut back to the porch with the preacher and Layla and her mom, and of course, mom is pissed and
and she has a great line too. Like, why do you deserve to live over my daughter? That basically making Dean feel more shit than ever before.
Yeah, and I mean, and of course the preacher's wife is like, no, he's too tired, and she's got such a puss on her,
Oh, I despise her. I even before we even find out what she's doing, she's a real bitch.
Yeah, well, Layla's mom is kind of got that bitchy. Yeah. Too.
Oh, that for sure.
But and as if something was like that to happen to somebody I loved, I would understand the oh well, why do you get to live? But you don't say that out loud. That's the shittiest thing to say.
Those are thoughts you think, not speak.
Yeah. I mean, if you're a good person, you don't think that, but still,
yeah,
Jesus.
Man. Yeah, but then again, you also get a feeling for her mother too, who's been there for, it seems like, for months on end, and everybody getting chosen over her daughter. And I mean, I guess I kind of get that. I mean, that Dean just came in off the street, and she's been there. She's been a loyal follower. So I mean, I can kind of see that without really condemning the mother a hell of a lot. But I'm like, yeah, that's just something you don't really say out loud.
But I guess it plays to the episode and to the character. So. Right. You meet at the hotel, and they talk about the trading the life for one life for another.
Right, and that's where Dean mentions being singled out at the birthday party, which I mentioned earlier. And so they, I think, was it, does Sam go back to the to see the preacher again? And why Dean sneaks around? Or no, I'm trying to remember.
They're talking. They're like wondering how does the preacher do it, and then they figure it's a reaper.
Right. Right. And
then they show how it's being done. So there's a woman like jogging
mm-hmm.
in the woods, and as like and they cut back and forth. So there's this. The preacher is healing an old guy in a wheelchair. You see this woman dying with the reaper kind of touching her.
Mm-hmm.
So he's like transferring the light.
Right, right. Right, the guy that with the
stone. And so then you cut back to Dean and Sam and talking about how reapers stop time, and that's why the clock at the pool was stuck.
Mm-hmm.
On whatever time it was like 1:27 or whatever, or something.
Right.
Whenever
Dean was healed, that's when the swimmer died. And yeah. Oh.
But then they talk about the weird cross at the church, mm-hmm. and I think while they're doing research, yeah. and then like there's a cross on a death card.
Mm-hmm.
For tarot.
Right, and in one. And at one point, Dean or Sam breaks into like the library or the office of or the basement. So it's something the private library of I want to say yeah. the wife and they
find the little spell book with the articles about who the Reverend deems as amoral.
Right.
And did you notice like this bothered me? I don't know because of a mom like woman thing.
Right.
But shit ton of dust on that shelf.
Yeah. Yes.
My house is like kind of, you know, I got kids. It's always a mess.
Right.
But
nothing's dusty, right?
Not like that, man. Like I have a high up like shelf, like it's super like the ceiling almost, and I don't go up there a whole lot, but nobody sees it. So it's all right there. It's like wipe that shit down, lady.
Yeah.
Get yourself a house cleaner.
Right. So we find out that the I guess the preacher was dying, and he went into a coma, and she prayed and used some dark religion, dark magic. She basically went dark side to trap a reaper, brought her husband back, but her husband lost his eyesight, and so now he's got she's tricking him into thinking he's got this gift to heal people,
right.
But she's the one that's playing like basically judge, jury, and executioner with people that she deems unfit. And when Sam opens that book, we find newspaper clippings with red crosses and X's through like the gay teacher or the people the protester people yeah. she deems not worthy of life. And,
right. And that's when you find out about the protester, so you know that he's next on the hit list.
Right, the guy that's protesting outside the tent, the tent revival. And, oh, there's so many. This episode, I mean, like I said it's a strong episode, but it's not my favorite, but it's a very strong episode. But there's just so many layers coming into this from, like, faith and, like, religion and just... Oh, just, I don't know. It's really hard to unpack it all in, like, one sitting, you know?
Yeah. It's good, though. I mean, I like how, you know, how they kind of delve into some of the religious aspects. And you know, later in the series, they do get into, like, this heaven and hell kind of thing. And
right.
You can tell that they're doing their research on a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
As far as, like, the church and the occult and how that kind of... is intertwined or, you know.
Yeah. Right. You know, avenging angels, archangels, stuff like that. Spirits unrest. I mean, spirits unrest or spirits that are not restful or that are unrest. That's a going theme through like the very first episode through current season.
Yeah. So there's like this definitely, you know, good versus evil dynamic, and I think this is one of the jumping points of that kind of
right
stuff.
Right. So at one point, I believe Dean is on the run from the cops / security. He's running around the area, right?
Don't you come back here. We'll put the fear of God in you. But I think that comes a little bit later.
Right. Yeah.
Because Sam finds the the stuff, and then they go and they look. So Sammy's looking for the protester, and Dean's trying to keep Layla from going up and getting healed.
Right, right. And basically he yells fire in a crowded movie house, and they evacuate the tent, and Emily is from the last episode. Layla is getting healed right now, which really pisses off Layla's mother.
Yeah. Well, and then Dean is like, you know, he's kind of sticking around, and he sees, that's when he, you know, that it's revealed that it is the preacher's wife, because he sees her praying with the cross. And then he, you know, he's like, I know what you're doing. And so she,
yes,
wife yelling for help. And that's when the police come and like, we'll put the fear of God in you. And these two like hokey little, you know, small time policemen, right. They, like, it's like a total joke. Cause it's, you know, right. They're like dopey little dudes. And I'm like, they're not scary at all.
And here's the chilling part of the chilling part that the wife gives, the preacher's wife gives. She's like, you want to arrest him and press charges? He's like, no, God, I'll deal with him. Oh fuck, Dean, you better watch out.
Oh, right.
The Reaper's on your ass now.
I know, bitch is tripping. Watch out,
bitch be tripping.
And so they end up in the motel room, and you know, they're talking about how Roy, the preacher, has no idea, and Sam is showing the old school black magic stuff that the preacher had. That's when they say he's gone dark. You said that earlier. I'm like, no, they meant that again in the episode, because they're all about the Star Wars quotes and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Star Wars the best. Yeah. What else?
It is the best. If you haven't seen it, you're a loser. Sorry. Get on. Let's go.
Don't be a punk. Go watch Star Wars.
No, I dressed up Kylo Ren yesterday for my sister's Halloween party and really rocked it. And then I got surprised because my brother-in-law was Skywalker. His kid was a Ewok, and then my sister was Princess Leia. So awesome. I felt right at home.
Nice.
I know. It was pretty good. So anyways, get back to the episode.
Yes.
So they got to figure out how to break that binding spell that the preacher's wife has with the Reaper. And then, you know, I think what they do is you go back to the preacher's house and everybody's in the tent because
they're doing a special sermon for Layla, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then Sam is looking for the wife, Sue Ann.
Yeah. Oh yes. Uninterrupted. Yeah. The preacher says uninterrupted. You come back later because he felt bad that he couldn't heal Layla during the sermon. So he wanted her to come back at another time, and that's when Sam finds the altar that Dean is going to be sacrificed for Layla. But I'm saying, continue on.
No. So everybody's in the tent. Sam's looking for Sue Ann. Dean is supposedly, he's like, you know, looks at the police, and he's like, here I am.
You know, put the fear in God in me now, boy!
And so as he's like jumping on top of the camper, and there's a dog barking, all this nonsense, Sam is in the cellar, and sees the altar with all the stuff on it, sees Dean's picture with the blood crossed out on its face, and kind of tips the whole thing over. And so the lights start to go out in the lot when you jump back to where Dean is.
Okay.
And he's in, you know, like they're popping off one by one in like that parking lot / outside the tent area.
Mm-hmm.
And so then Dean sees the Reaper. And, you know, you're going back and forth between Dean and Sam, and then Sam, like, finds a pendant, breaks it, and then as Layla's getting healed, the Reverend is confused because he's like, it's not working, you know?
Right, he's questioning his, you know, powers now.
Then Sue Ann gets reaped, you know, and I'm kind of like, bop, Alicia!
Yeah, like, Sam broke this cross, like, amulet, right?
Yeah, and it had, like, some, I don't know if there's blood in there, or, like, it's just, like, some red goo or whatever is in there. So, it's broken, the Reaper, like, you know, kind of grins, and,
So, here's my question to you. Do you think if the preacher kept his hands on Layla, and the Reaper took the preacher's wife, do you think Layla would have been cured?
No.
No? Because
I think the Reaper at that point was like, I'm done with this.
I'm not doing your bidding anymore.
Yeah, exactly. This bitch is mine. I'm not doing anybody else any favors.
Okay.
You know, this is the funny thing is too is that if you notice, going forth in the series, this is the only time a Reaper looks as bad as this one does.
Yeah, and I wonder is that because he was pretty much enslaved and captured by the preacher's wife? Maybe.
Yeah. Or it's just like they decided not to do the makeup on everybody.
Yeah. No, I get that. I get that. So
sort of like humanize the Reaper, or you know, a little bit more.
Yeah.
Instead of them, like this guy looking like a mumbling kind of like.
Goofus.
Yeah. Yes, Goofus is a good one.
Yeah. So So now, unfortunately, Layla does not get cured, but she has faith still that.
Yeah.
Something's good that's going to happen. And then we flash forward to like the hotel scene where Dean and Sam are about to leave town.
Yeah, and you know, he's sulking because, you know, did we do the right thing? And he feels bad for Layla. And then she's, you know, after that she shows up.
Right. Right, and she says, she's like, well, I have faith, Dean, that, you know, everything's going to be okay. And then Dean goes, well, you know, I'm not the praying individual, you know, kind of guy, but I will pray for you. And she's like, well, that's a miracle right there. And like, oh, that line got me. I'm like, oh, fuck.
Yeah. I thought that was pretty funny, you know.
Yeah, yeah. So she's like, well, that's a miracle right there in itself. And like, oh, Dean, you better pray hard and talk to Castiel. Even though Castiel right. doesn't appear until season 4, I think.
Dead by then.
What's no that? Hope. Oh yeah. Ooh, you just went a little darker.
Sorry.
Oh my god. But yeah, so I mean, overall, what do you give this episode? I think you give it a thumbs up, right?
Oh yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I mean, I do too. I mean, it's not like my favorite like Scarecrow, but it's definitely a really good episode of season 1, even with the aforementioned, you know, taser, you know, debacle.
Yeah, I think the beginning of the episode is, you know, doesn't justify the rest of it. You know, it's like if you had just turned this thing on and only watched the first 5 minutes and was like, okay, forget this.
Yeah,
then you would have been like disappointed because you didn't stay for the rest of it.
Right. No. So overall, I really enjoyed it, except for the first 5 minutes. And so yeah, I give this one a thumbs up. Katie, you give this one a thumbs up. And there is one other quote, and it's by Dean, and I couldn't find it on YouTube at the time, so I'm just going to repeat what Dean said. And this was, and it speaks volumes even now, when like certain, you know, mass shootings happens or like people who think are doing God's work. But Dean says, "God save us from half the people that think they're doing God's work." I just thought that was a fantastic quote, a great line. I'm like, oh, all right, man, you're my favorite.
Yeah, it's a pretty powerful statement.
Right. So yeah,
I don't know if he's writing for that, but it really is. I think. Overall, for like human nature, it's very pertinent to like who we are as a human race.
Yeah, yeah.
You see all the stuff going on lately; it's just disappointing.
Oh, for sure, for sure. Yeah, but that's
let's get down. Like you know,
that's a discussion for another day, not for MOL. No. But you know, but so overall, I enjoyed the episode a ton. There's 3 classic songs used in this episode, so thank you again to TuneFind.com. Obviously, "Don't Fear the Reaper" by Blue Oyster Cult. I mean, how can you not have Blue Oyster Cult?
I know, right? So good.
Yeah. So number 2 is "Death in the Valley" by the Death Riders. This was for the next Netflix version when the Reaper kills the girl in the woods, mm-hmm. and then "All Things Change" by I think Canal. So those are the 3 songs used in this episode. 4 fun facts for this episode was, number 1, this is Eric Kripke's favorite episode of the first season. Number 2, at the start of the episode, when Dean is lying in the hospital bed, he complains to Sam about how daytime TV sucks. This is a rather cheeky line coming from Jensen Ackles, considering that he got his first real big break on the daytime series Days of Our Lives, not General Hospital.
There we go. It would have been funnier if it was used from General Hospital.
There you go. So, number 3, Erica Carroll, who portrays the nurse in the hospital, who is also in episode 18, Something Wicked, and later in the season is a young mother in the park. Erica then comes back as a recurring character to portray the Angel Hannah in season 9. So, number 4, Julian Barbour, who plays Layla's mother, Mrs. Rourke, later appears in season 12 as one of the leaders of the British Men of Letters as Dr. Hess.
So, oh, right.
So going back to, you know, what did I say? You know, few, you know, 10, 12 years later, you know, you come back as another character. So, yeah, I mean, I've got nothing but really good things to say about those last two episodes, other than the fact that I really didn't like the whole thing about the taser, which I'll overlook still a little bit. So you got any closing comments, Kitty, you'd like to leave with the listeners?
No, absolutely not. I think whatever I had to say, I said it. And, you know, they should have listened. They don't need a summary. Pay attention.
Yes. So I'd say these two episodes were great. I like them a lot. Well, thank you for tuning into MOL tonight. Tonight you heard commercials from the Junk Drawer Podcast and Throwing the Controller. So be sure to check out those two shows as well as all the wonderful podcasts at the Speakeasy Podcast Network at www.thespeakeasypodcastnetwork.tumblr.com. Where talk is cheap, and so are we. Also, remember, if you have any questions or comments about the show, we would love to hear from you at our official email address at menofletterssupernatural@gmail.com. For Katie, I'm Tim. Thank you for listening to Men of Letters, and we'll see you all on down the road. Good night.
Peace out.
Thank you for listening to Men of Letters.